Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to episode number 114 of the CMO Marketing Podcast with me, your host, Simon Dell. Now, today on the show, we have a gentleman all the way from the US of A by the name of Brad Smith. He is the CEO and founder of a company called Codeless Interactive, and also the CEO of Wordable. He's doing two CEO jobs together, basically because they recently acquired Wordable. And Brad is all about content, the production of content, how best to optimize content, and basically anything with the word content in it. He knows a huge amount, and his advice and suggestions for businesses of all sizes are absolutely brilliant and well worth listening to. Before we jump into the podcast, the usual announcements. Gilberto, the podcast boss, he is our producer. Cora, who is our internal guru in terms of organizing all these, she is fantastic. If you want to get on to this podcast, if you think you would be a great guest, email us at hello@cemoh.com, CEMOH.com, and Cora will get back to you and discuss whether you would make a good guest. Also, rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify and wherever else you can find us. And finally, come and connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, any of those channels, but preferably LinkedIn. I like connecting with people on LinkedIn. That'd be great. So yeah, look forward to chatting with you. Tell me what you think of the show, all those kind of bits and pieces. So yeah, that's pretty much it for all of our housekeeping. Let's jump into the show and listen to what Brad Smith has to say. Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, all the way from Denver, Colorado. It is Brad Smith. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
Very quickly, let's tell everyone who you are, because you're doing two CEO roles at the moment for a business called Codeless and a business called Wordable. So let's explain Codeless first for everybody.
Cool. Yeah. So Codeless is a content marketing, content production company. We do something like 300 or 400 articles a month for a very large software companies like Monday.com, but for their big ones. Also, a lot of it's like SEO based, a lot of it's like growth based, but with like actually good writing. That's the difference. The typical SEO writing in air quotes. We probably work with something like 60, 70 writers at the moment. So it's a large team. One of the things we do is manually upload, format, optimize content for every client across a couple hundred articles. So we were actually a customer of Wordable before it went up for sale about a year ago. We decided to acquire it because, like I said, we do that stuff manually already in-house. And we kind of see the need for hopefully automating all that soul-sucking, time-consuming stuff. So that's the other gig that you were alluding to as Wordable. We just rebuilt it, relaunched it, and yeah, excited to like hopefully automate a lot of crappy content marketing things.
So how do you split your time then if you're trying to do both of those? Or is the view that eventually sort of Wordable will have its own CEO?
Thankfully, Codeless, it runs pretty smoothly in that It's been around for a while. We have a great team. They do a lot of the work. And so I'm thankfully able to spend time on the stuff that, you know, doesn't make a lot of money, but that needs to make more money. And so the hope and goal is to step in, get Wordable going, get it off the ground, get it relaunched, bring in a team to take it from there. So that's definitely the goal long term.
You joked about that typical SEO writing a moment ago. What's bad SEO writing? What's that typical SEO writing that you see out there?
Yeah, there's two big things I see, two big issues with it. There's a lot of issues, but the two big ones I see are tends to be very generic and watered down, meaning the actual information on the page, the actual writing or recommendations or whatever, tend to be like super, super thin, which might work in some areas for like consumer products, think $5, $10, $20 e-commerce products. Like those types of readers aren't going to care that much. And they aren't going to do all the research. But once you get into complex services, anything technical, the reader is just going to see through that stuff and know automatically that this person doesn't know what they're talking about. The second issue is it tends to be very, very like copycat and robotic in two different ways. Either they're just like following what amazing tools like MarketMuse that we use and ClearScope and other ones to recommend things to better match search intent, to recommend things we should be writing about. People just take that as gospel and they don't really like dig in. They don't really add customer stories. They don't really add any nuance. The other issue is they'll just, a lot of times, writers who aren't subject matter experts themselves, they don't always know what they're talking about. So they just regurgitate like what's already out there. They regurgitate what's already in the space when, again, in a lot of cases in any kind of like technical field, nothing's ever black and white.
Yeah. So, all right, that's the bad stuff. You guys are writing the good stuff. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that need to be in a good article. But, you know, what are your top three to sit there and go, this is what makes, these are the top three that make really good SEO writing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if we're talking about SEO writing specifically, then it does need to match search intent. So okay. If I look at one article and I look at like who it's potentially ranking against or trying to rank against, let's say those are all list posts. And this one that you gave me is like a landing page or a product page. I'm going to tell you straight off the bat, like it might be written well, but it's not going to perform. So we're kind of like already screwing ourselves in the very beginning. Other things I typically look for then are like the hook or the angle, meaning the topics, like what you're writing about. The hook or the angle is like, what makes this interesting? Like, why should people care? Why should people read this? If there's 3,000 other articles in the same thing, which there probably are, what's unique or interesting about yours that's going to make it stand out? And we can go into like some of those, but it's protecting yourself from threats, internal mistakes you might already be making, simplifying your life, or, you know, some sort of hack in some simple way. Those are like kind of classic copywriting things that have always been around. Third thing is usually some like writing style, for lack of a better word. That's kind of like the intangible stuff. So when I read something, it's like, is it interesting? Is this person like, does it read like a magazine article that has a little bit of like style and substance to it? Not like AI just generated a bunch of like super technical language that just kind of sucks to read.
Is the whole, I mean, obviously, you know, SEO has changed dramatically in the last 10, 15 years, but is there still, you talk about writing for SEO, and we'll come to sort of other writing in a minute, but writing for SEO, are they still trying to stuff keywords in? Are we still trying to get like 4%, 5% of the keywords? Is that still a thing? Is Google still sort of fooled by all of that?
There's good news and bad news. They're not strictly looking at just one keyword that we're trying to stuff a lot in one document.
Yeah.
However, there are like semantic topic and keywords, meaning if we're talking about like engineer as a keyword, well, that could mean software engineer, it could mean electrical engineer. So what are the other related topics or concepts around those things? And how can we work those concepts into the article? That's where, unfortunately, when marketers or writers just put their head down and go on like robot mode, they kind of do the same mistakes. So they kind of still do the keyword stuffing in a sense, because they're like, oh, I just got to tick these off my checklist. I got to say these 5 words or these 10 words. When again, in reality, we got to think a little deeper. Think about how do we walk that fine line of aligning with search intent and making sure we're touching on all these topics, but also doing it in such a way that's going to like be interesting and be unique and jump out to someone reading it.
Because essentially, I guess that's what you want. I guess Google is, you know, the more people read it, they want people reading it, sharing it, jumping onto the next article. So I guess when you talk about moving away from SEO writing to non-SEO writing, or just, you know, writing to attract readers, I guess you guys are judged by length of time on the article, or, you know, how do you measure your success with writing an article? What's the benchmark for you guys internally?
So internally, I'll say what we do internally and then preface that with what we, like, external people usually look at. Internally, I want to say we have something like 15 variables that we look at, almost like a little, I think of it as like a balanced scorecard, meaning it's got to be a little bit of SEO. It's got to be a little bit of copywriting. It's got to be a little bit of like some kind of CCA. If someone reads this, what are we telling them to do? It's got to be part visual. So we do custom designs for articles, for example. Are we illustrating concepts, or are we illustrating examples and concrete examples? Because again, good writing often comes back to specificity. So really making concrete, specific suggestions or recommendations or highlighting examples, that sort of thing. So, and then can we use images like video or custom design to like illustrate those things? So that's how we kind of look at it externally. Then we also look at like a lot of the things that I'm mentioning are like inputs. So they're leading indicators, which are great when we're doing a lot of content at scale. From a client perspective, it's a lot of the lagging indicators. So in other words, keyword rankings, traffic, time on site, like you said, what's the next page or the next like micro conversion? So if we get someone in to the article, is 90% of those leaving, or are we getting those people to read one more article or opt into something or do a free trial? Those are usually like the business outcomes that we try to figure out with the client. And then again, the problem is that might take 6-12 months for all that stuff to start flowing in, start seeing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And lengths of content. I mean, when I've been reading things that you kind of get the idea that Google gets really kind of excited by anything that's like 2,500 words long, or should people be spending more time pumping out 500, 600 word blogs, or should they kind of sit down and focus and maybe go and write 2,500 words. Because again, yes, not everyone can afford to employ a service like Codeless or Wordable, whatever. They want to write them themselves. So when time is sparse, what's the best solution?
So it kind of depends on two things. So your space and your readers. For instance, consumers, e-commerce stuff, think of like, I don't know, fashion. That stuff's going to be a lot shorter overall. A lot shorter.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot heavier on visuals, a lot heavier on galleries. I would say don't write very long. Opposite for like software or technology or anything like complex. If you're selling to business buyers, if you're selling services that might take 6 months to close, those people want to dig into all the details and actually like get into the nitty gritty. The other thing is to mimic what's already out there. So in other words, go look at what's already ranking. If the average across the 10 articles there, if the average is going to be 2,000 words, then yes, definitely do 2,000 to 3,000 words. You know, the good news is you don't need to do 10,000 necessarily unless everything else rankings also in the 10,000 space. But if the average is 2,000, 3,000, that's where I'd probably recommend you got to do more than 500. It's not going to give you that bang for your buck. And the other thing too, to remember with search, for example, that's really important is that unless you're ranking in the top three, it doesn't matter. Like, cause you're not going to get any traffic. So if you think of, it's a zero sum game. So if you can't break into the top three, and if you're not going to be able to create the content in a way that's going to get you into the top three, like it's not going to be long enough, not going to be whatever, beautiful enough, don't do it. Do a different keyword, do a different topic. Cause unless you're in the top three, that's where 60, 70, 80% of the people are clicking at any given time.
Well, that kind of leads me to my next question was that, I guess the challenge is then getting more people to read it. So it's kind of one of those self-fulfilling prophecies that the more people read it, the higher it ranks, and the higher it ranks, the more people read it. So if you're not in that top three, but you want to get in the top three, I guess you've also got to have the structure and the reach. You know, you've got to be sharing it on social media or on e-newsletters. So I guess producing a piece of content is maybe like 20% of the battle, and 80% of the battle is then going out there and getting in front of as many eyeballs as possible.
For sure. And also selection of the topic and the keyword in the first place is a huge percentage of that too. So kind of like I mentioned, if you're trying to rank for something really competitive against really large websites, it might take you 3 years to crack into that, in which case don't do it. Do something easier in the short term. So like you alluded to, it's a chicken and the egg problem. An example though, like we acquired Wordable, traffic was trending down when we bought it. I think site traffic was around like 5,000 visits a month. We started picking up on like, okay, well, what content do they have that's already performing well? How do we create a lot of like formulaic, scalable content that's targeting low competition stuff around those things? A year later, it's that content's bringing in over 40,000 visits a month. And then we're doing the harder, more difficult content now on top of that. Because like you said, if you're not ranking for anything, you got to go rank for some things first, get traffic to it. Then once your site's bigger, once your brand is bigger, once you have more traffic, it's easier to go after the more competitive stuff. So it is definitely a chicken and the egg.
So I guess then the golden question at that point is your keyword research. So, you know, you said before you start doing anything, you want to sit there and go, what are we going to write about? Or what are we going to create content about? And I guess to me, there's two things. There's number one, what keywords are trending, where the traffic is. And I'd be interested to find out what you use around that. But I guess the other question is then what other trending topics are there that aren't necessarily appearing in search keyword results? So where do you find out all of that information? Because I still use the Google AdWords tool. And I every time I use it, I feel I should be using something better. But sort of works for you guys?
So that tool is great for commercial keywords and topics, meaning typically bottom of the funnel stuff. The good news about that is it's going to hopefully convert more the people that read it. The bad news is it doesn't give you great like top of the funnel suggestions, which are more around like education, information, common questions, common problems. For instance, if you sell, I don't know, like air conditioning units, someone is not going to immediately go to like brand air conditioner discount. They're not going to immediately go to, usually it's like, why did my air conditioner break down? Air conditioner is running loud and I feel air, but nothing's coming out. Like they're going to go to those problems. And usually that kind of stuff, kind of like you're referencing, you can find them in two different ways. Trending topics like Google Trends is a really easy place to go.
Okay.
That's going to help you find like more topical stuff that's recently, and you can see the trend over time. So you can see like in the last year or two, when COVID hits and everyone's spending their time at home and they want to redecorate their house now, or they want to like, you're probably going to see this huge uptick in like air conditioning repairs, painting my house, like all those types of things. So And it's the reason you want to use something like that versus Ahrefs, which we use for traditional keyword research. A lot of those like trending things or things that spike aren't always, the data is not always available. The historical data is not always available in like an Ahrefs or in a Google Keyword Planner. So for all other like evergreen topics, traditional keyword research, we use Ahrefs because I really like two features on there. Number one is like the parent and related feature. So I can not just look at one keyword. I can look at like everything around it. And that's good from a content planning perspective. If I'm planning the 100 articles over the long term, I want to see like what all those relationships are ahead of time. That helps me plan content like when I'm actually going to send it to writers. Because I know, okay, this writer is already really good at these three topics. So I'm going to like assign it that way. The other thing I really like about Ahrefs data is the competition stuff and specifically around links. So once I start looking at what's actually ranking and what it's going to take to compete, from a link building perspective, what is it going to take? So how large are those websites? How many links do those websites have to all those individual pages? That's like another way that I will gauge competitiveness. Again, going backwards to, can I rank for this really quickly or not? And if I can't, but it's important and it's commercial related and it's related to my product, the long term, I definitely still want to do that. And I just know it's going to take longer to pay off versus maybe I might prioritize the easier content ahead of time, less links. The websites ranking are not huge brand names. It's not like Amazon.com or Wikipedia that I'm going against. And then also too, like from a link building promotion perspective, I think I can kind of beat it. So that's another important point, I guess, that I breezed over. But when you're picking keywords, you should already know how you're going to rank or get traffic to them. And if you same conversation applies. If you can't, if you don't know how you're going to get 10 links guaranteed to this page, maybe don't do it. Like that's another thing that people should be planning in ahead of time and they don't always.
And everyone kind of, depending on who you read and what videos you watch, the whole backlinks thing is very, it's still important. You still need to get links back to, you write an article, you still need to get people links, valid links back to that article.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and especially the smaller the website or like the more large indirect competitors, the more important it is. So again, if you're Amazon.com or whoever, or if you're like Forbes, a lot of times in content and SEO, you're not competing against direct competitors. You're competing against indirect competitors just for like real estate on the search engine result page. So even though you don't think you're going to compete against Amazon for something, you might if you actually look at what's already ranking in your space. So that's definitely one of the challenges is figuring out, okay, well, in those cases, maybe I can't compete with them because again, they don't need a lot of links, but I probably will just because they're such a huge website and they're, you know, their brand awareness. Think of link building. People get caught up in the trends and the shiny stuff. Think of link building as like PR. And think when we talk about like site authority or domain authority, think of that as just like a proxy for brand awareness. So if you're driving brand awareness, it's the same goals at the end of the day. So don't get caught up for doing like link building just for the sake of doing link building, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess then we get, you would probably get 10 times what we get, 100 times what we get, but we get the emails saying, can I guest post on your site? People offering even to pay for it and things like that. You know, when you're producing content for, let's say, monday.com, are they taking some of those articles and going and putting them on other people's websites and linking back, or are they kind of keeping the content to themselves? Is there a difference in value of doing that?
Yeah, so we're doing content just for their own site, just for their own domain and brand and everything else. A large brand like that often have better leverage and they have more people saying yes to them. So for instance, we did a huge guide for them that was like, I don't know, 300 different project management tools, pros and cons and walkthroughs and like all these, like this super, super long detailed guide. And so if we look at, okay, who's already talking about project management tools, what journalists are writing about project management tools, like, and then you go to those people and you say, hey, we just put together this huge guide. If you're a huge brand like that, then people usually say yes to you of like, hey, I would love to feature that or send it out or whatever. Yeah. If you're a small brand, they're probably not going to listen to you. So that's where you got to get a little more like creative. Yeah. Again, depending on your space you're in, smaller brands, try to piggyback on bigger ones. So what can you offer them? Can you run a contest with a bigger brand in your space? Think of like, not competitors, but think of like other people in the space. An example of that, I worked with a travel company years ago and we partnered with like a hotel and like a local car company. And like, I think we just covered the airline flight, but we created like a little, hey, we're going to send you on a free trip to this location and you'll get a free like attraction and we're going to set this little agenda for you and the free hotel and it's all expenses paid, all that kind of stuff. And all the partners in that just threw in their own product and service. So it didn't, like, out of pocket, it didn't cost anyone that much. We were able to go out and cross promote this thing to like a much wider audience. And again, what we're talking about here, a contest and promotions and PR, it's all going to drive good links at the end of the day if you're doing it right.
And it's funny that you kind of talk about all those things. And when somebody talks about SEO and content, all of a sudden, these things are all kind of meshed together. There's this kind of ecosystem. This is essentially what marketing is. It's this ecosystem and lots of different activities that are all kind of working together to create this bigger result. So, you know, SEO people sort of sitting there isolated on their own in their own little office and not taking into account everything else that goes on in marketing are probably doing themselves a massive disservice.
Yeah, definitely. Because like you said, the good news about all this stuff is that what the impact in one area influences the impact in the other areas. So with the example I just gave you, we were talking about like increasing brand awareness, cross-promoting to other people's newsletters, our customer bases, driving links. We also did one with bloggers and we sent bloggers on a trip and then we got them to create free content for us, for our sites and free video. That would cost us a lot of money out of pocket. So all these things, it's like this little virtuous cycle where, again, if you think back like 10, 20 years ago, running radio ads in one space doesn't necessarily get you a better response rate on your direct mailers or vice versa. Like you don't have that integration. So I think that is the good news. It's more complicated today because there's more moving pieces, but over time, the leverage of different activities should definitely pick up and build on one another.
It's funny because I've worked with a lot of PR people and their goal is to get an article in the news or an online news section or something like that. And they're sort of high-fiving each other once an article is published. And I'm sort of, you know, going, well, and actually really, I mean, yeah, sure, I want people reading that article, but, you know, backlink, I want the backlink from that news website to our website. That's the most important thing. Yes, that the article is there, but, you know, the backlink is the gold medal thing. That's what we want to achieve.
For sure, yeah. That's one of the issues with Haro. Help a reporter out, responding to that for links. Generally speaking, if a million people are doing it, you probably don't want to do it too, just because it's going to be really, really difficult to jump out. But one of the problems, not only does it take a long time to actually pitch those things, two things often happen when you're talking to journalists, especially journalists at big sites. They don't give you a link at all. And if they do, they give it to like your brand or your homepage. They'll never give it to like a product page, a blog post, whatever. So that's one of the issues too, is it's like, are you getting the link? And then, you know, where's that link going? And a lot of times,
I never understood that from news sites, was that all they need to do is ring up the company and say, look, you know, we've published an article about you that mentions you or whatever. You give us $100 and we'll stick a link in there. And I'd be like, fucking take my money. You know, it's like, it always struck me that they were missing a revenue opportunity there. And they're all using these kind of, I mean, I'd be interested to hear your thought on these content networking services that put the ads on. Taboola is one and Outbrain's another. Do you think they're worth investing in terms of getting your content out there?
They're okay. They're cheap. You can only really use them for top of the funnel content, meaning those problem-oriented, question-oriented type keywords or something really like clickbaity.
Yeah.
So if you're running top of the funnel ads to those or using those, they're relatively cheap, which is good. So you can run them and get like cheap clicks. You're going to have to retarget those audiences because don't think you're going to get those people to your website and they're going to buy. You're going to have to retarget them.
The conversion rate for them is diabolical. It's terrible. But
But again, if you're like if you are launching a new product, nobody knows you in the space. There are benefits of doing it. You just got to know kind of why you're running them and how you're going to like get those people back to your site ultimately.
Yeah, I guess if you retargeted them on Facebook or Instagram, potentially with a video that was that expanded on what the original clickbaity article was about. But yeah, I mean, I've always found they've given great traffic, but very rarely do they actually. I'd always see them more as brand awareness. So where I've used them successfully is with bigger brands that aren't necessarily trying to sell anything online. They're just trying to reinforce potentially the authority of their brand. We did it with a big insulation brand. It was all, and you know, obviously we do it leading up to winter and saying, you know, three ways to make your house snug warm this winter. And it comes through and they learn about the brand and they learn about the product. And then when they go to the big Bunnings warehouse, which is the Home Depot or whatever you guys call it over there, but then they see the brand. It's about just being exposed to that brand and then triggering it when they're out there in the retail space. So
definitely.
A couple of sort of final questions. PDFs and downloads, does that still work? I mean, everyone, you know, everyone and his dog has created downloadable PDFs and books that you, you know, ebooks that you need to sign up for, gateways and blah, 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 blah. Is it better just to say, you know what, just have the information, just, you know, just read it. We don't want to try and get an email off you.
Usually, yes. So for example, like for like a case study, for instance,
yeah,
you see this a lot in like B2B or services. If I'm giving away, or if I'm trying to give away a case study, putting up an email is going to, on the one hand, it's going to limit the number of people who see it. On the other side, or the other, the counter argument to that is like, well, I only want qualified people to look at the case study. But again, it's one of those things where it's like, is the information in there like really that interesting or valuable or unique that you need to hide it?
Yeah,
don't I want more people to see that to try to increase the number of people who are actually going to reach out for a trial or demo or like an instant quote or whatever? So I'm a fan usually of that type of information, just like opening it up and letting people check it out and letting more people see it, the better. Again, you can retarget those people. So you can still tell if people click on a certain page, they read something. The alternative to that is if you're doing some sort of, two ways to go think about it, like a course or some type of like multi-part series where you want to like drip and nurture someone over time. That you can gate, because you can deliver like one episode, one video a day sort of thing for so many days and then try to sell them after that. The other spin on that, that of course I'm now forgetting, is there was one other spin on that, and it was really good. Maybe I'll come back to it if I remember.
Yeah, we think about it in a minute. Well, I'll leave you with my last question, and maybe this might trigger your brain. You mentioned a word, ClearScope, earlier on. AI content writing. My business partner gets really kind of excited about how an AI is going to just write these articles and keyword description and all this kind of stuff. Do you think that'll ever do you guys out of a job, you know, and, or is it something that, you know, perhaps the AI hasn't, still can't quite get it? Where's your thought on all this?
Yeah. So we've tested it a lot, and thankfully in the short term, it doesn't look like anytime soon. It looks like we'll be employed for a little longer. I mean, long-term probably, right? Like long-term, we're probably all going to be destroyed by robots anyway. Yeah. But short-term, usually what happens is AI is currently like pulling in all this data and kind of like pattern matching and regurgitating based on like these things commonly show up together. So when it's like trying to write something, it's saying, okay, if an example is like, how do I change a tire? Then what are the common like threads and things that come up when people search for something like that? What are all the common data points? And how can I like structure those things together in order or sequence? The problem is it doesn't really know what it's talking about. So one section of a piece of content might not relate to the other section that much. They don't build, like usually when you're writing, you introduce one section and then build on it in the next section. And you try to like build on like what your the readers now learned. None of that can happen. It tends to be very fact-based. So in other words, it's very concrete, very black and white. Again, it's a robot. So think of like, what is blank? It could do that type of a query, that type of a keyword pretty well. So like, I don't know, what is a migraine? Like, what is a migraine? It could do that sort of content decently well. If you said, how is a migraine different from, I don't know, like an ACL injury? Yeah, exactly. Like two totally different. If you're comparing anything, if you're looking for subjectivity, if you're looking for nuance, it can't do any of that. It also can't do style or copywriting. So for instance, if you're trying to like inject personality in something, if you're trying to make something readable, interesting, inside jokes, jargon, it can't do jargon. It can't do all those little things that get the reader to kind of like understand, oh yeah, this person is on my side. They know what they're talking about. They kind of understand my pain points. Can't do any of that stuff yet.
Yeah, I guess that was my thought, you know, with AI. It can write content, but it can't necessarily write an opinion, you know.
Exactly. That's, or an argument.
Know, opinions.
Or persuasion.
Yeah, they're uniquely human elements. And again, so maybe as AI gradually takes over all your staff's jobs, and maybe that's the argument is that we want real copywriters, human copywriters, to express an opinion about something or to create an argument or something like that, because that is still uniquely human and uniquely kind of something that I don't think AI will ever be able to replicate, fingers crossed, or unless, as you say, totally. We get killed by robots, so who knows?
At that point, we won't be caring about copywriting. So
I was going to say, let's. What a happy thought to leave that on today. So, Brad, thank you very much for your time today. It's been insightful enough that when I get this video, I'm going to show it to all the staff here and tell them to watch it. Not because none of them watch my podcast at all, ever. Listen to them.
They don't care.
But I will force them to do this one. I say you need to listen to what Brad's got to say. So. Look, really appreciate that. And I think, you know, a lot of people will get at least two or three really key tips out of what you've said today. So I really appreciate that. And you're off traveling, aren't you, for the next, you're off around somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, we're doing like a massive road trip. I'm in Hawaii right now, and we're going to the mainland, and we're going to Lake Mead around Las Vegas, Colorado, Minnesota, Montana, just a huge big circle of the middle of the U.S. So
awesome.
For a couple of weeks, I'll be in a car with kids.
Enjoy that. And
thank you.
Yeah, look, and if anyone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way of reaching out to you? You're obviously on LinkedIn, but anywhere else that you kind of...
On LinkedIn, I think my thing is BS Marketer. Those are my initials.
Okay.
no other reason. Wordable.io is, well, we have a lot of content around a lot of these topics we just talked about. And we kind of try to go in depth on the hows and whys of content at scale and how big companies are doing it. Codeless at getcodeless.com is our agency, again, where we do lots and lots and lots of content. And there's more interesting stuff there. So those are usually the best ways.
Have a safe journey.
Thank you so much.
Lovely. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Appreciate it.
That's pretty much it from me. It is the end of episode 114 of the SEMO Marketing Podcast. We look forward to you tuning in next time.